Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Spencer Caron. On December 10th, 2020, the Supreme Court decided the case of Tanzen versus Tanvir. In an 8-0 ruling, the Supreme Court affirmed the judgment of the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, holding that appropriate relief under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, also known as RFRA, includes claims for money damages against government officials in their individual capacities. Stephanie Taub, Senior Counsel at First Liberty, joins us today to discuss the ruling and its implications.
My name is Stephanie Taub. I am a senior counsel at First Liberty Institute. First Liberty is a nationwide nonprofit law firm dedicated to defending religious liberty for all Americans. My firm filed an amicus brief in the case that we're going to be talking about today in support of the plaintiff's respondents. All right, so religious liberty cases can sometimes split the court into strange coalitions. Sometimes we have unanimous opinions, sometimes 7-2, sometimes in the Establishment Clause case in particular, you get very fractured opinions. But this past Thursday, December 10th, the Supreme Court issued a unanimous religious liberty opinion. It was a case called Tanzen v. Tanvir. And so this is a very specific holding, but it's an important holding that makes it possible for the most egregious religious liberty violations in the federal government the most egregious religious liberty violators of the federal government, so federal employees, to be held financially responsible for their actions. So the victims can sue them personally for money damages. It's good news that the court was able to agree on this principle, mostly because it sends a warning to federal employees that they have to think twice before violating our religious freedom. So the vote here was 8-0. Justice Barrett was not on the court at the time that the case was argued, so she didn't take part in this opinion. The opinion was written by Justice Thomas, and there were no concurrences or dissents, so it is a short and sweet 9-page opinion. We're going to go through the opinion today, the issues that are involved in the case, point out a few interesting notes that are not in the opinion, and then touch on what we think will happen next. This case was interpreting the remedies provision of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, also called RFRA. RFRA is one of the most important statutes protecting religious liberty. I'd say it's the most important federal statute protecting religious liberty. As you probably know, it was put into place in 1993 in the wake of Employment Division versus Smith. And Smith was a case that severely gutted the First Amendment's Free Exercise Clause, making it much more difficult for people whose religious liberty has been burdened to actually bring a successful lawsuit. Smith held that for neutral and generally applicable laws, courts only have to rely or have to apply rational basis scrutiny, and it threw out the framework of strict scrutiny that had been in place for decades before that. And essentially, no one in Congress at the time liked that Smith decision, so everyone came together to restore the religious liberty standard that was in place, that was previously in place, also sometimes known as the Sherbert or Yoder standard. So RFRA provides that when the federal government substantially burdens religious exercise, that government action must face strict scrutiny. If the government cannot demonstrate that its actions actually furthered a compelling interest and was narrowly tailored to be as least restrictive as possible to furthering that interest, then the government action is unlawful. So in other words, RFRA is basically says that if the federal government is burdening your religious beliefs, whether they intend to or not, they have to have a very good reason for doing so. And the statute expressly provides a cause of action, allowing plaintiffs to recover appropriate relief against the government. So here, turning back to this case, this is Tanzi v. Tanvir, and the court unanimously concluded that appropriate relief includes claims for money damages against federal employees in their personal capacities. So to be clear, we're only talking about monetary relief, so not injunctive relief. We're only talking about claims that are against federal employees, and this case doesn't apply to state or local employees. And we're also only talking about personal capacity lawsuits. We're not talking about official capacity lawsuits. So the only question is whether appropriate relief includes this kind of very specific relief. And so what's the story here? What are the facts of the case? How does this case come before the court? So we have three individuals who are U.S. citizens or lawful permanent residents, and they're Muslim. They allege that they were approached by FBI agents and asked and put to a very difficult choice. They were asked to act as informants against their religious communities, which would violate their religious beliefs. And when they refused, they were wrongly placed on the no-fly list in retaliation for that refusal and barred from taking any sort of commercial flight. So they brought multiple claims in federal court, including RFRA claims. They sought injunctive relief to be removed from the no-fly list so they would be able to fly again. And they also sought damages to recover the amount that they lost for plane tickets, other economic damages. One of the plaintiffs lost his job because it involved frequent travel, so he wasn't able to do that job anymore. And after, so the key here is after they filed that lawsuit, they were removed from the no-fly list. So they were able to fly again, and they no longer had a live claim for injunctive relief. It was their claim for injunctive relief was mooted. So the only possible way that they could get their case heard, that they could get some sort of justice for what they endured, was a claim for damages. And so if you're bringing a claim for damages, you really have two options here. You could bring a claim for damages against the entity itself, so a claim against the state that the money would come out of the government coffers. Or you could bring a claim against the individual, so which the damages would come out of that employee's own pocket. And so here the issue, plaintiffs only focus their appeal on this second aspect, on the individual bad actor, on damages that would come from the personal capacity lawsuit. They decided not to go for the damages against the entity itself, against the government entity itself. So they didn't do the official capacity lawsuit that's not on appeal. And so one interesting question is, why didn't they seek damages against the federal government itself when the money would come out of the federal government's, out of the federal government's coffers? And so that would be probably because of the Supreme Court Sossaman v. Texas decision, which is a sovereign immunity decision. And so the federal government is, of course, a sovereign. And so in order for sovereigns to be sued for money damages, they have to have clearly and expressly waived sovereign immunity. And so Sossaman was a case that was interpreting the remedies provision of RLUIPA, which is similar to RFRA. RLUIPA is the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act, which is sometimes known as the sister statute to RFRA. And it, so there in the Sossaman case, they held that the state is not clear enough to waive sovereign immunity, so you couldn't receive damages against the sovereign from that statute. And so it's, although it hasn't been expressly decided, it's likely that a decision on the RFRA could come out the same way. So the plaintiffs here decided to focus on personal capacity lawsuits. And so the district court held that RFRA did not authorize this sort of personal capacity lawsuit. The Second Circuit reversed, holding that it did, and then the Supreme Court now affirmed the Second Circuit. So as I mentioned, there's a few important notes about the scope here. So it's only about federal employees, not state or local employees, and that's because RFRA only applies to the federal government. So when RFRA was originally passed in 1993, Congress wanted it to apply to the states and the federal government. It had language in there that defined government as including state and local in addition to federal. and treating them all the same way. But the Supreme Court held in City of Bernie v. Flores that RFRA didn't apply to the state governments. So basically that it's up to the Congress by statute can't amend the Constitution. So they can't amend the Constitution by changing Smith. They essentially had to, that would require a constitutional amendment, not just a statute. So RFRA could only bind the federal government. So this case is only, so consequentially, this RFRA is not about, is not about state employees and whether they would be subject to personal capacity suits. It's only about federal employees and whether they would be subject to these suits. That said, it could have implications for state versions of RFRA. So after the court said that RFRA does not apply to the states, then several states on their own initiative decided to pass their own versions of RFRA. Some of them are very, very similar to the text of the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and some are different. And so in order to see whether or not this this Tanzan v. Tanvir decision applies or will guide you as to how the state version, state analogs will be applied, you have to look at the text of those state decisions. So Texas, for example, Texas's RFRA has its own remedies provision that's very specific and doesn't use the same language. So Tanzan v. Tanvir likely wouldn't apply to that. But on the other hand, Florida's RFRA has very similar language, so I'd argue that it does apply. It does apply to the Florida state RFRA. You have to look at each of them on a state by state basis. All right. So then, the next important thing to note is that this case is only about money damages. We're not talking about injunctive relief here. So it's clear everyone agrees that RFRA does allow injunctive relief, but here, the claim for injunctive relief is mooted, so the only remaining claims are damages claims. And so one of the main features of this decision is that it closes a loophole that governments have sometimes used to avoid being held responsible for religious liberty violations. Normally, when you're bringing a religious liberty lawsuit, you're seeking, most religious liberty lawsuits seek injunctive relief. They seek to have the government end whatever unconstitutional action that the government is taking so that it won't apply in the future. But sometimes the relief is, or the injury is only in the past, and so the only thing that can remedy that is damages. Or sometimes you bring a lawsuit, the very act of bringing the lawsuit, the government doesn't want to go to court about it, so they just stop whatever action it is. And that moots your injunctive relief. And if you don't have a claim for damages, then your case is essentially moot and you can't go forward. So this closes that loophole and allows some cases that otherwise would not be allowed to continue. And then finally, one more important thing to note is qualified immunity. So the parties here agreed that qualified immunity does apply to these personal capacity claims against the officers. So in the same way that if you're suing a state officer, a state employee, for a violation of the Free Exercise Clause under the First Amendment, and you're trying to seek damages from them, that you would, they would argue that they're entitled to qualified immunity, which protects all but the most incompetent officers, or makes it very difficult for plaintiffs to actually successfully bring claims for damages, because you essentially have to argue that this is that they are violating a law that's clearly established in order for them to be held liable, in order for the claims to survive that qualified immunity. This decision aligns RFRA with the 1983 case law.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.